Welcome to Guerrilla Radio on CFUV 101.9 FM, 104.3 on your cable dial. And, you know, we're heard around the world in Shoutcast at cfuv.uvic.ca. Well, last week, newly minted Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper pondered aloud his bewilderment at the behavior of a certain government, saying it boggles the mind that any regime on the face of the earth would want to do anything that would remind people of Nazi Germany. But Mr. Harper was not referring to the United States, where daily the nation more resembles the hated fascists of the last century. In his eyes, America is an exemplar to be imitated by Canada, as witnessed in Afghanistan today. No, Mr. Harper's statement, made without irony, was aimed at Iran, based on entirely false information reported by the National Post. But Stephen's astonishment is boggling the minds of many in the United States and elsewhere as the Bush regime continues a Reich-like march, assailing nations abroad with unprovoked wars and rumors of war, and eviscerating the Constitution at home. Paul Craig Roberts is an economist, journalist, and co-author of the book The Tyranny of Good Intentions. Roberts describes himself still as a conservative Republican, though left behind by what the Bush administration and its policies are making of America. Paul Craig Roberts in the first half. And is the state of the world driving you mad? Antidepressant drug sales are booming, but are they the answer to depression or a health threat? Angela Bishkoff has worked towards justice and environmental sustainability for nearly 20 years. Living in four different Canadian cities, she and partner Tucker Gomberg organized dozens of education and advocacy campaigns and half a dozen election bids and created the activist website greenspiration.org. Since the untimely death of her partner, she's been on a speaking tour to bring awareness of the downside and dangers of antidepressants. Angela Bishkoff in the second half and Janine Bancroft will be here at the bottom of the hour to bring us up to speed with some of the good things to do in and around Victoria this coming week. But first, Paul Craig Roberts and the treasonous complicity of America's citizenry. Stick around. Well, welcome back to the program, Paul.
Thank you, Chris.
Well, now, Paul, in your article, The Ministry of Fear, you question the patriotism of Americans that would allow George Bush's annulment of the founding document of your nation, the Constitution. Now, how is this being accomplished by Mr. Bush and all?
Just by doing it, and no one stops him. You see, the Republicans have the total government. So there's no power base for the opposition party. And so Bush just does these things, and there's no way of stopping them. On a few occasions, the courts have tried or been tempted, but then he takes various maneuvers and actions to evade their jurisdiction or move it to another court or change the charges, and so he just does it.
Well, that's amazing. I mean, we often hear about the checks and balances of the American system and why the founders set them up that way. They were concerned. They'd just been living under a tyrant king, and they wanted to make sure that there wasn't a homegrown tyrant king engendered by the young new nation. Didn't they foresee all of these tricks and sleights of hand that Bush and people that may be like him to come would attempt in subverting the checks and balances of the American system?
I don't know that they could foresee all that. I mean, certainly they did not foresee the strong central government that's here today. It was a federation of states, essentially independent countries. And the Constitution was changed so much by Lincoln and by Franklin Delano Roosevelt. I don't know that they could foresee any of this. But, of course, it depends on the citizenry being aware, and the citizens aren't concerned about a dictator king. They're concerned about terrorists. So they think they can trust the dictator king to keep the terrorists at bay. So the citizenry are negligent, and no system can survive if the citizens are negligent.
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly now the economy in the United States is starting to suffer, and this war has cost, I'm not sure how many billions of dollars already, but I've heard figures of somewhere around $1 billion a month to support the war in just Iraq. You know, isn't there come a time when the American citizenry, no matter how apolitical or how poorly informed, are going to put two and two together and say, hey, look, I mean, these guys are hurting me now. They're hurting my way of life, let alone those people who have family and friends that have been killed and wounded in this whole fiasco.
I don't know. There's not a whole lot of sign of that. The people, they're full of hubris. You know, Americans always think they're great. And they are full of delusion, and they're fed lies, and they've got no media. There's no media here except for the Internet. The media is highly concentrated, controlled by a few people. They're not about to get on the wrong side of the government. And so, unless you make an effort to get information, you can't even know what's happened.
Well, you come from an economics background, and you served in the Reagan administration. Policies that I certainly didn't agree with, as I recall them at the time, the trickle-down theory and so forth. What about Bush's economic plan here? Or is there an economic plan beyond giving tax cuts to the rich and inflating the military?
I don't think there's any economic policy. The administration is completely absorbed in its wars, and it's doing its best to start another one with Iran. And, I mean, look, the falsehoods that were printed the other day in the Canadian papers.
Yeah, I briefly mentioned that in the introduction, the National Post.
Well, this is commonplace. This is... I even heard on the National Public Radio the other day that the Taliban had attacked America, and the Taliban were responsible for 9/11. Now, that's madness. It's nonsense. Today, we see here on CNN, CNN.com, World News, where the Israeli Prime Minister declares that Iran will have a nuclear weapon in a few months. Well, nobody on the face of the earth that has the slightest knowledge or intelligence believes that they're going to have a nuclear weapon in a few months. It's not physically possible unless somebody gives them one, but that's not what he means. He means they're going to be producing them. And
well, this is,
you would think that he would be, you know, laughed out of office. Instead, he gets headlines, CNN. So there's a complicity of the press with the warmongers. And you can't read the statement of the Israeli Prime Minister is anything other than a propaganda statement to make people fear the mushroom cloud and to build pressure or acceptance of an attack on Iran. It's sort of like Hitler telling people last night, Polish troops crossed our frontier and attacked Germany. It's nonsense that people fell for it.
Well, this always seems to get back to Hitler, and I've seen so many
because of the lies. It's the blatant lies, and it brings them no shame. Anytime anybody, it's got nothing to do with anything else. It's the lies. See, Hitler was this fantastic liar,
and he had a completely complicit press as well.
Right, and that's what we're witnessing. Everything that we have been told about Afghanistan, the Taliban, Iraq, and now Iran, it's a lie.
Yeah.
And educated, aware people, experts, they know that. And yet, nothing happens. It's just it's like living in the Soviet Union, where, you know, they could announce whatever they wanted.
Well, you know, the quote that I read off the top of the show of Stephen Harper's reaction, and you mentioned it, that this thing that was published on Friday, the National Post, only on the National Post, not on its many newspapers across the country, the chain of CanWest Global, they had a front page story accusing Iran of passing laws that would make Jews and Christians wear identifying insignia on their clothing, and the picture that went with this story was a circa 1938 or so photograph taken from presumably Germany with two, a man and a woman, wearing that infamous yellow Star of David, so evocative of what was to come later. This story was penned by a man named Amir Tahiri. Amir Tahiri, and it's in the inside section, they've got him on the op page. But inside, he identifies himself as a author and journalist and a member of Benador Associates. Are you familiar with Benador?
Well, they're connected to the neoconservatives.
A public relations firm, essentially.
Yeah, but that's part of the neoconservative network. But the real question is, where was the desk editor, the managing editor, the editor-in-chief of the newspaper? I mean, they must have known this was utter BS. Or they must have thought, at least, we better check this before we print this.
Front page across the country.
But it just shows the propagandists. See, that's the old black empire. Now, he was in league with the neocons up to the eyeball.
Yeah, Conrad, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, he had them all on his board, paying them all this money on advisory.
Very close with the angel. What was it? The angel of darkness.
Richard Perle.
All of
them.
Whatever happened to him? We don't see much of Richard Perle around anymore.
Well, he's there. You can bet your bottom dollar. He's there. He's pulling all the strings. The neocons have even more power this term than they had the first term.
Well, and Iran is a very important part of their overall plan to throw the whole region, the Muslim world, but especially in the Middle East, into utter chaos by the looks of it.
It's really hard to know what motivates them, but I think we can take for granted that they do intend wider war. And but why I think Americans, in fact, the whole world, is complicit is that they can state the most obvious falsehood and there's no consequence. The newspapers can print just utter lies, propagandistic lies, straight out of the Third Reich headlines, and there's no consequence. So what do we make of that? It's a failure of people everywhere to uphold basic standards of truthfulness.
Well, I don't know that. I mean, in the United States, I know that your First Amendment is very powerful, and as well as protecting free speech, it also protects false speech. But in Canada, we don't have such a provision, and we do have a law about hate speech and publishing.
Well, the headlines at the National Post Burnett was hate speech.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. in my view, I'm not a lawyer, of course.
No, but it was. It's just that it's permissible to hate certain people and groups.
Not in this country, it isn't.
Yeah, you can hate Iran all you want, and even Americans for that matter.
Oh, that's the exception that we
but
make.
You can't hate preferred minorities, and Iranians for some reason are not a preferred minority. So, but what we're faced with is a total breakdown in respect for truth. And And the war doesn't do anyone any good except, you know, the profits of the military-industrial complex, and it gives the Pentagon, you know, more chances to experiment with doctrines and force structures and so on. But it achieves no positive purpose for the American people, and yet they just sit there and, having gone through all the lies about Iraq, you'd think they would be wised up. But they seem now to be accepting all the stuff about Iran, just like they accepted all the lies about Iraq. So it gets to be pretty frustrating. And the newspapers, and the TV and all the rest, they are part of it. I mean, if you watch Fox News, you're watching the propaganda ministry of the Bush administration.
Yeah, well, and it made even more obvious with the ascension of Mr. Snow Mr. Bush's mouthpiece at the White House.
And all the rest copy that. They come, they follow that. So some are not as bad, but they all are. So we can now have the Israeli prime minister doesn't have to feel embarrassed by declaring that Iran is months away from making nuclear weapons. So this is not... It's not conceivable.
Well, or Canada's Prime Minister Harper, after being told by a reporter that the story that we mentioned on the front page of the Post was false, was utterly without base, was anybody with half a brain would know that this was a propaganda effort. He responds, well, it sounds like something the Iranians would do anyway, and then continues to lambaste Iran. I mean, it's unfathomable. Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio, CFUV 101.9 FM, 104.3 on your cable dial, and cfuv.uvic.ca on the net. I'm speaking tonight with Paul Craig Roberts, and Paul is an economist, journalist, and co-author of the book, The Tyranny of Good Intentions. He describes himself still as a conservative Republican, and that, Paul, is saying quite a lot to your loyalty. But now, Paul, there's another group that I would never expect to see coming down against the Bush administration. And in your article that I picked up at Counterpunch, it's called The Real Assault on America, you mentioned a report called Power Surge that's been put out by the Cato Institute. For our listeners who aren't aware of the Cato Institute, who are these radical guys, Paul?
The Cato Institute is a libertarian think tank. They've been very successful in Washington and its fundraisers and have their own modern building. And I was I had an apartment there for 3 or 4 years. And what the Cato Institute, I mean, it took them 5 years, but they finally got around to putting two of their constitutional scholars on to Bush's unconstitutional illegal behavior, and they've documented it, and it's horrifying. And it shows a man who's in total violation of his oath of office to support and uphold the Constitution. He's tearing it down to shreds. And they show, you know, how this happens and how and document the cases where he evades courts. And we have in the United States something called the Federalist Society, and I used to think of them as just conservative lawyers who were committed to original intent and were trying to prevent the Constitution from being destroyed by the other side, who could find every possible right in it that was never there. Well, what it really looks like the Federalist Society is interested in is building executive power. And the only nominees for important federal judgeships that come from Republicans are members of the Federalist Society.
Yeah, there's something similar being attempted in this country, although in its nascent stage now. Stephen Harper, who is to all measure a fellow traveler with Bush and the neocons, he is not a Canadian necessarily, but he is trying the exact same tactics up here and using the same language, activist judges. Nobody in Canada had ever even heard such a term before. And for his first nominee to our Supreme Court, all of a sudden they're creating a tempest in a teapot about so-called activist judges when nobody, you know, it was totally off the radar.
These are propaganda terms, and there's certainly a power grab, and there's certainly a disbelief in separation of powers and democracy and in accountability. They want an executive who's not accountable. And it's a powerful movement. The neoconservatives here spearhead it. The Federalist Society spearheads it. Actually, Clay's Wren wrote a book, America the Virtuous, about the rise of the neoconservatives, and he shows that actually that they've got, you know, tentacles everywhere, and it is something that, if it continues, will forever alter the face of North America. The whole notion of democracy and accountability will be discredited. The notion of civil liberties, or even of the individual as having rights, will be discredited. And it's frightening to me that, given the extraordinary mistakes and lies and the defeat of their expectations in Iraq, for example, that nothing has happened to them. They just get more appointments.
It's utter madness. You know, you sound to me, Paul, to be a man of the South, and we're fast running out of time, but I want to get your take on last year's Hurricane Katrina and what that means, to all Americans, of course, and people around the world showed great sympathy, but for the South particularly.
Well, I don't know that it means anything particular to the South, but it does mean that the Bush administration again ignored all the warnings and let it happen. And after it happened, didn't respond for a number of days. And they have been accused of failing to respond in order to produce looting and unrest and so on that would then justify them sending in federal troops in violation of the Posse Comitatus Act, in which the United States Army is not supposed to be involved in local law enforcement. So a lot of people think that they just let this happen and then failed to respond to the obvious disaster for days so that they could further erode legal and constitutional principles that block encroachments of federal power. I think that's probably the best explanation for it. It's hard to really understand any other explanation.
Well, and they also, talking about Posse Comitatus, they also did something else that I don't think has been seen in the United States since pre-revolutionary times. They sent in private mercenaries, corporate mercenary soldiers, the like that are patrolling the streets of Fallujah and getting up to God knows what else.
$1,500 a day.
Yeah, good money to go down to
yeah,
the Big
and the
Easy.
Yeah, the cost of the war is not $1 billion a week. I think it's more like $7 billion a week.
A week? Oh, I said $1 billion a month, but
it's very high, and it's already cost us several $100 billion, and experts estimate it'll cost between $1 and $2 trillion.
God, and just imagine what you could do. I mean,
what you have to say is, what is the reason for this enormous commitment?
In Canada now, Canadians are not nearly in the scope of the United States, of course, but you've spent more than $4 billion patrolling the streets of Afghanistan and not constructing anything with those so-called provincial reconstruction teams.
See, the thing is, you'll have to patrol the streets in perpetuity.
Yeah, yeah, manning the walls of the garrisons around the world.
How are they going to patrol the streets forever? It's not going to happen. So the whole thing comes back to nonsense. And what is the purpose, and what is in the heads of Bolton and Cheney and Wolfowitz and Rumsfeld and Rice and Hadley? What are they thinking? What is in their heads? I've likened it to Hitler marching off into Russia. I mean, it's insanity. It has no sense.
Well, I guess that maybe is the one saving grace, is that we've seen Hitler and Stalin and a whole panoply of other horrors, dictators and conquerors, and yet the one thing they all share in common is that eventually they fail, victims of their own hubris and bad judgment.
Yeah, but they destroy their societies in the meantime.
Yeah, well, that's the downside.
And the real awful thing is that we're now seeing comparable kinds of behavior arising in democracies.
Everybody follows the Americans' lead, I'm afraid.
Yeah, you see, I mean, now we have a man, the United States has killed tens of thousands of civilians in Iraq. And they say, oh, well, this was collateral damage. We didn't intend to kill them. So since we didn't intend to kill them, we're not really guilty. But they don't stop. And what are they achieving? I mean, the insurgency is not destroyed. It may simply, you know, become involved in a civil war. But we've not prevailed in any sense. And yet we continue with these policies that they can't really explain. I mean, why are they doing it? You see, the real reason that Bush is in Iraq, they must be so ashamed of it, they won't tell us what it is. Because everything they've told us is a lie. There were no weapons. There were no terrorist connections, no responsibility for 9/11. And we most certainly have not built a democracy. We brought a country to the brink of civil war. So everything they say, so why are they really there? The reason they won't tell us. So it must really be a shameful reason.
Well, as long as they still feel the need that to lie, at least, we have some hope. Paul Craig Roberts, I want to thank you so much for coming back on the program. Paul Craig Roberts is the author of the book, The Tyranny of Good Intentions, and he's also a frequent contributor to the news website, counterpunch.org. Thanks a lot again for coming on the show, Paul, and I wish I could leave you with a more upbeat a sense of our
kind of hard
show
to be upbeat about America these days. Anyhow, good night, Chris.
All right, then, Bo. I know I want you to stay around, though, because I'm going to get a hold of Janine in just a second, and she's going to bring us up to speed with maybe a little some of the upbeat stuff that we can do in and around Victoria to help, in some cases, preserve the democracy we still enjoy in this country for the time being, Mr. Harper notwithstanding. So do stick around for that.
Buenos dias, amigos. Experience a tropical morning.
Salsa Thursdays.
Que rico. Every Thursday from 6 to 8 o'clock in the morning, listen to the Mr. Salsa Show. We introduce music from all 21 Spanish countries, including cha-cha-cha, salsa in English, French, and Italian. Ay, caramba.
Salsa Thursdays.
Salsa Thursdays, and welcome back to Guerrilla Radio, CFUV 101.9 FM, 104.3 cable, cfuv.uvic.ca on the internet. Joining me now, as oft she does, is Janine Bancroft. Hey, Janine.
Chris.
So, what's going on this week?
Well, a little bit of good news, as a matter of fact. I was at the Strength and Community celebration this afternoon, and was speaking with Richard Boyce, who, you know, is a photojournalist up Cathedral Grove area there. Right. And he says that the provincial government is going to be taking back their attempt to collect fees for parking in our parks.
Oh, well, I'll believe it when I don't see it, I guess.
Well, his claim is that everybody's just been parking outside the parks and walking in, parking on the side of the road, and so they figure they're just going to get rid of it. He says it's a done deal, but we'll see what happens.
Well, and I know that a lot of those parking meters, people resent that, and they always have, because when this was introduced, and a lot of those parking meters get trashed.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, charging money to go into the wilderness. I'm just watching the news, and the poo has hit the fan at the Six Nations in Ontario, eh?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, big time. They're tearing up the road. The Native people are tearing up the highway. They got a bulldozer there. So I don't know the full story there, but do you want to know what's going on around town this week, right?
Well, I think that's what people expect, Janine.
Okay, well, there's some good things happening.
Right.
There's a Victoria Seniors Advocacy Service. Services are opening doors. So if you are a senior and you have any need for advocacy in terms of health care or residential issues or whatever, they're going to be Tuesday mornings from 9 till noon and Thursday afternoons from 1 till 4 in the Blanchard Community Center. And so their phone number is 388-7696 for seniors advocacy. Tuesday, there's a couple of good things. The Western Canada Wilderness Committee is trying to establish a park in the South Okanagan, and they're having a slide presentation from 7 till 8:30 at the Emily Carr Library Meeting Room. That's the library out by Town and Country there. And then also if people are in town and they're young and they want to go to learn how to do claymation, there's a free workshop from 4:30 to 7 on Tuesday at Little Fernwood, 1921 Fernwood Road. But you got to be between 14 and 18 years to get in. So it could be tricky trying to sneak in there. And then there's the Real Youth Film Festival on the 25th. That's Thursday. And this is, I've seen some of these short films, and they're really great. The youngest, I think, was in grade 2 or 3, and then right up to sort of high school years. So
look out, Spielberg.
Yeah, that's right. 7 o'clock at the Victoria Theater there on Douglas Street, 808 Douglas Street. And then did you know that your friend Stephen Harper's coming to town?
Oh, my God. I did have an uneasy queasiness in my stomach. When's that going to happen?
Well, we're all very excited. We're having a barbecue and rally for him at the Lawn of the Empress. Where else? On Friday at 11, this is organized by the Community Solidarity Coalition, and when they do this, they really do it. They bring out the barbecues, and so everybody come on down Friday at 11.
Bring your veggie dogs.
Bring your veggie dogs, that's right. Well, they usually actually supply those things, too.
Oh, very good. So what, is he coming in by boat on the Britannia or something?
I believe he's speaking at a $95 a plate luncheon here, hosted by our Chamber of Commerce.
Bargain at half the price.
And that's right. Well, and Gordon's going to be there, of course. So we want to, you know, we want to give them a royal welcome to our city. Tell them what we, show them how we're really feeling about them.
I tell you, that national, his reaction to the National Post story in this, go to pej.org if you're interested. I wrote an article about the Post's blatant propaganda. Check that out, pej.org. It's just, you know, and his reaction is, it just says it all, you know. And Keith Martin, our local liberal so-called MP, he even went further, getting up in the House and putting on a show and calling for a boycott of Iranian oil and, you know, and all this. I mean, it's such an obvious sham. I mean, none of them, of course, even thought to ask the Iranian embassy if this was true, which, of course, it turned out to be an utter fabrication. So anyway, fuck.
If you're going to, you know, build up for war, this is part of the mechanism, isn't it? Stephen Harper now, what a guy. He's come out against the Holocaust. I mean,
well, there you go.
What a stand, you know? He's really out on a limb there. Yeah, Mr. Popularity.
Well, yeah. I'm sure he likes mom and apple pie, too.
You're right.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, look, Janine, is there anything else or what?
Well, there's a community feast to help some Native people with repatriation on Saturday at the Winds Center, and then there's an examination of money, the Canadian Action Party, on Sunday. That should be good. It starts at 1:30 at 2852 Douglas Street.
Okay, well, that's great. And your show Thursday's 11 Winds of Change
Charity
Hum, and the street news is it out yet?
Well, we're crossing our fingers that it made the sail over from Vancouver. Is going to be here tomorrow morning,
so that'll be the June issue then, will it?
Yeah, you bet.
Oh, welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. CFUV 101.9 FM 104.3 on your cable dial. And you know we're heard on the internet at cfuv.uvic.ca. That was, I imagine, People in Planes is the name of the band. Yeah, that sounds kind of interesting. Well, so the pharmaceutical industry promises an easy way to see a rosier world. I mean, just take a pill and the pain will go away. But at what cost, this promise? Angela Bischoff has worked towards justice and environmental sustainability for nearly 20 years. And living in four different Canadian cities, she and her partner, Tucker Gomberg, organized dozens of education and advocacy campaigns, a half dozen election bids, and they created the activist website, greenspiration.org. Since Tucker's untimely death, she's been on a speaking tour to bring awareness of the downside and dangers of antidepressants. Welcome back to the program, Angela.
Thanks very much, Chris.
Well, now, so what's the deal with the Boiling Frog? What's that all about?
Boiling Frog is my sister organization. They, Kelly Reinhardt and Bridget Howarth, joined me on this tour, and they're kind of independent media experts, and they're doing all the video and audio work for the trip. So our tour is a multimedia presentation. I'm presenting on the dangers of antidepressants, and they're broadening the issue out to talk more about the pharmaceutical industry more broadly, and they're creating podcasts video and audio podcast of our trip and posting it on my site, greenspiration.org, all along the way. And we're producing a video documentary of the trip as well.
Well, this is amazing with this great age of technology where these kinds of things at one time, I mean, you'd have to be the CBC or something to pull that off, or the NFB at least. And now you guys can just sort of carry all this portable stuff around, eh?
Yeah, we're schlepping a lot of equipment with us, computer, video camera, still camera, a video projector, you know, a little sound boom box, plus, you know, all the gear that we're using to sell because we're distributing information all along the way. So we're schlepping a lot of stuff, but we're doing it all by Via Rail. So Via Rail is one of our sponsors. They gave us a couple of CanRail passes, which we're really grateful for.
Oh, nice. Did you get a sleeper with that?
No.
Oh.
But we're stopping quite regularly because we're doing a 23-city trip, so there's only been a couple of nights where we've actually had to sleep on the train.
Okay. And one of your stops, your whistle stops, is going to be here in Victoria.
Yeah, on June 1st. We'll be at the Dream Space.
That's a Tuesday next, not tomorrow,
yeah,
but a week Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And so what can people expect to go see? I know you described some of it, but can you flesh it out a little bit for us?
Yeah, the three of us take turns presenting different aspects of the show, and all of our spoken word is interrupted by multimedia presentations. We've got a big video screen behind us, and we've put together different video presentations that include musical interludes and compilations, really, of many different types of videos that are out on the market about the pharmaceutical drug industry and antidepressants in particular. And so we speak about, you know, we're speaking and showing these multimedia presentations, and then at the end we leave people with, you know, petitions to sign, materials to buy, and free newspapers to take home with them.
Yeah, well, you know, I every now and then I see in the media another report about side effects of antidepressants. The last one I can recall said that it increased the suicide potential, especially in elders, for some reason. I'm not sure why that is, but for people who trust their doctors and you know, are feeling depressed and can't seem to see any way out of it, and they go and they get prescribed these things, what should they know, Angela, that their doctors may not be telling them?
Well, they should know, and the doctor should be telling them what the potential side effects are. And there's, you know, a million different side effects. One, the most serious, of course, which is suicidal thought or thoughts of violence, hostility, self-harm, that sort of thing. And those are actually quite well understood and quite recognized. The statistics, and these have been confirmed by several different huge meta-analyses done, you know, globally over the years. In fact, the most recent one was done by the Ottawa Health Research Institute. The statistics tell us that you're twice as likely to attempt suicide or kill yourself on an antidepressant drug than on a placebo. And one of the reasons why that is because it acts as an excitotoxin. In other words, it agitates people, and that's what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to excite you into action. It's an antidepressant. So people generally, when they're depressed, they might have some anxiety, but they're not motivated. And so an antidepressant is to motivate you to action. And for some people, that may be helpful, and for other people, it acts as an excitotoxin and it agitates them. And approximately about a quarter of the people who go on antidepressant drugs become more agitated. And this is a very serious adverse reaction, in fact, because it's a very potent predictor of suicide. And I believe that's exactly what happened to Tucker, my husband, who was depressed, went on an antidepressant drug, got worse very quickly, became more agitated. The doctor didn't perceive it as an adverse reaction, cranked up the dosage repeatedly until he was on the maximum. Then he prescribed a tranquilizer to counter the effects of the agitation from the first drug. And by that point, you know, Tucker was having thoughts of self-harm. He only began having them after starting the drug, and he killed himself. And this is, you know, a very common story that I've heard hundreds of times from people personally, their own agitation that only began after they started the drug. Plus, that's what really forced the U.S. FDA and Health Canada into putting out public advisories in 2004, telling people and telling drug companies that they had to change their product monographs to say that these drugs can cause suicidal thought in a certain percentage of the population, and it's not even a small percentage. You know, Dr. David Healy, who is a psychiatrist in London, England, and he's about the world's leading critics of the SSRI industry, and he, in fact, prescribes them, so it's not like he's even anti-drug. But his estimate is that about 1 in 500 people who go on an antidepressant drug will actually kill themselves from the drug itself. And if you consider there's 50 million people worldwide on these drugs, it's even about 100,000 deaths from these drugs alone. So it's a very serious adverse reaction. Besides suicide, there's a whole host of other adverse reactions, like sexual dysfunction. You know, 30 to 70% of people who go on antidepressants will experience some sort of sexual dysfunction. Now, you might think, depression, people who are depressed often have sexual dysfunction. Yes, except people are put on SSRIs or antidepressants for a whole host of reasons, not just depression. They're put on antidepressants for pain relief, anxiety, obsessive-compulsive disorder, sleep problems, smoking cessation, behavior problems, PMS, menopause. So you go on an antidepressant because you're having some pain or you're experiencing PMS, and before you know it, you have sexual dysfunction. And then there's, you know, weight gain, weight loss, all sorts of, then there's dependence and addiction. So withdrawal becomes a very serious problem with antidepressant drugs that we're not told when we go on them that it's going to be very difficult to come off them. And the majority of people who go on antidepressants become addicted to them. They try to come off, they go little by little, and they get to a point where they can't go any further down because they start getting nauseous and sweating and shock-like zaps in their brain. And the doctor never told them that this would happen, but so they go back a higher dose on the pill and the symptoms go away. So that's a sign of withdrawal, and then they think, and then the doctor says, oh no, you're going to be on the drug for life, or the doctor says, oh, it's just a return of your depression, you can't go off the drug. Well, baloney, it's a withdrawal effect, and it's a very serious adverse reaction, actually.
Well, when you call it the SSRI industry, I mean, now, this is a business, and this is big business, and if Health Canada thinks 1 in 500 people that are likely to
not
die...
Not Health Canada. David Healy said 1 in 500.
Well, if he's correct, I mean, and that seems to be an acceptable number to the people in charge of writing laws and regulations regarding these things, and the doctors prescribing them, what recourse do people have, say, in your situation where... your loved one died as a result of a prescription, and it was an avoidable death. I mean, what recourse do you and people like you have in bringing the big pharmaceutical industries to bear responsibility for these things?
Well, there's literally been hundreds of lawsuits in the United States against pharmaceutical companies for not warning patients about the suicidal impacts, because obviously there have been thousands, if not tens of thousands, of deaths as a direct result of these drugs. And of those hundreds of cases, my understanding is that only one of all the cases was actually won by the drug company, and all the rest were either settled out of court or won by the patient advocate. So a lot of them are settled out of court because drug companies, you know, don't want the bad press, right? But so there is a legal recourse, although I looked into that when Tooker first died, and the amount of money that I could ever win in a settlement would never even be close to enough to cover the court case. So it didn't make any, you know, unless I had $100,000 to throw away, which I don't, then it, you know, justice would only be meted out for the rich in Canada, in my case, because Tooker wasn't a rich man. You know, besides that, we're trying to get a fatality inquiry in Nova Scotia into Tooker's death and into, you know, the prescribing and monitoring habits of physicians in Nova Scotia and how can this be prevented in the future. We're, you know, asking people to write Health Canada and ask for a ban on antidepressants for children and seniors and just trying to get more public awareness. That's where I'm working from, just making people aware of the dangers. And, you know, I don't know that justice you know, maybe someday people will clue into it. I'm sure they will, and suddenly we'll move out of antidepressants just as the popularity of tranquilizers kind of went out of style. But then, you know, there'll probably be a new drug on the market. But, you know, the problem is that there's so many people that are, like, the way the drug companies are marketing antidepressant drugs,
mm-hmm.
they're expanding the definition of what it is to be mentally ill, and so suddenly you used to be shy, well, now you've got social anxiety disorder, and mm-hmm. there's a pill for that, and so you've got tens of millions of people on these drugs that don't really need to be on the drugs, and doctors aren't aware. The doctors are giving them out like candy, not really warning people of the potential side effects. As doctors become more aware of them, you know, maybe fewer people will take them. I don't know. It's a problem because in the United States, they're allowed to advertise, direct-to-consumer advertising to people through television and magazines and stuff. And so you have a much higher percentage of the population on antidepressant drugs because of the advertising. And in Canada, at this point, they're not allowed legally to do direct-to-consumer advertising. But there is a legal challenge by CanWest
to the rescue.
A charter challenge to bring that down because they want those advertising dollars.
Oh, yeah, there's millions, millions and millions and millions of dollars
yeah.
involved in that.
And ultimately, that'll just bring way more patients to the industry as well.
It reminds me of those phantom drift nets, you know. I mean, they just perpetuate themselves. Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking tonight with Angela Bischoff, and she's in the middle of the Healthy Mind, Body, Planet tour going from coast to coast. I don't know, are you going up north as well, Angela?
No, not north, but...
So not coast to coast,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
just coast. Well, coast to coast is pretty good, and
yeah.
considering the size
cities.
Of this place. What's that?
23 cities.
23 cities, and arriving in Victoria the first day of June this is quite a new space, and it's called Dream Space. It's at 751 Discovery Street, and that's a week tomorrow, by the way, June 1. And I haven't checked it out myself, but it seems to be an interesting place where there's a lot of local activists and activities going on in and around that place. And so, Angela, you said something, and I know the last time you were on the program, we spoke of this, and it jolted me a little just to hear you say that there was some concern about getting children who are being prescribed these antidepressants to maybe finding something else, another way to treat them. Is there, as I said at the top, you know, last report that I heard, you know, singled out elders, and for some reason elders seem to be more susceptible to suicidal tendency on these things than people in their middle years, I guess. But are there similar studies being done with children, and are they more susceptible than adults?
Yeah, you know, I've been asking a lot of different doctors that because I often hear people refer to the concern with children. And partly that's because children are more impulsive, that they're more likely to hurt themselves. But really, the statistics are across the board that you're twice as likely to harm yourself on antidepressant drugs as on placebo. The seniors, that one came out just about a week ago in the mainstream
mm-hmm.
press. They said that they were five times more likely to kill themselves on an antidepressant drug than on a placebo. And I'm reading through the lines, that that's because seniors are, I've heard around half of seniors are on antidepressant drugs. So, you know, people, they're depressed and they're moving slow and people think they should have more energy and they're cranking up the dosages of antidepressant drugs. So that I think that's what's going on with seniors. It's just a way higher rate. Antidepressants is more like one in five women. In fact, there's two-thirds of the antidepressants prescribed are to women. And we're looking at about one in five in B.C.
Well, this is, as you mentioned, like what the 60s were to tranquilizers. You know, it's Mother's Little Helper all over again.
Mm. And, you know, what brought down tranquilizers as a very popular mainstream drug was the withdrawal effects. And so I suspect that's what's going to be going on with antidepressants. It's interesting because withdrawal is often the death knell for different psychiatric drugs. When antidepressants and SSRIs in particular came onto the market in the late 80s, early 90s, the drug companies managed to get the FDA to agree to allow them to promote them as non-habit-forming, which is complete baloney because everyone knows that they are habit-forming. In Europe, interestingly, they weren't allowed to promote them as non-habit-forming. But what they do in the United States, what they got the FDA to agree to, is that they promote them as, or they acknowledge that they have a discontinuation syndrome. And, you know, their spin doctors try to make it sound like discontinuation syndrome is different than addiction. But in fact, they are the same thing. And because of that little marketing ploy, they've been able to promote them as non-habit forming because they know that, you know, if people knew that they were addictive, they'd be a lot less likely to go on them. So I predict that that's what's going to bring SSRIs down in the end. But, you know, they'll be okay with that because they'll have a new drug on the market and they can only have a patent on these drugs mm-hmm. for 20 years anyway. So by that point, you know, they started coming out. The first one was in 88. So now we're getting up to the 20-year time frame already. So by that point, it doesn't matter if everybody's addicted to them because they'll have a new drug on the market then.
Yeah, well, and this whole drug patenting thing is another phenomenon. You mentioned 20 years. That was an extension granted by the previous government
yeah.
to the drugs companies so that basically kicking the slats from underneath the generic drug industry
yeah.
and not just for these types of drugs, but for all drugs in Canada, which mm-hmm. it was a very backward step in my view. But yeah, once they reach that window of opportunity where anybody can generically create a drug, whether it's Viagra or it's what was that, the first one that really kicked it off for depression? It was on everybody's lips.
How soon? Prozac.
You know, mm-hmm. do you ever hear the word Prozac anymore? Well, no, because it's old and it's kind of mm-hmm. past its time. You know,
no, they've repatented it and repackaged it. It's now called Seraphim.
Oh, there you go.
And it's directed. Are marketed directly for women for PMS.
Oh, so it's like the Virginia Slims of the
yeah.
drugs industry.
Exactly. And interestingly, it's three times more expensive than Paxil, even though it's the exact same drug. It's the exact same drug. They got in a new patent on it. They changed the color. They changed one tiny little molecule. And now they're directing it toward women.
Oh, it's just like,
the price.
That's just like women's clothes, too. You guys always get nailed for the high prices, right? I mean, that's just the way it is. Sorry, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, in a lot of cases, too, men... I don't know. I think men tend more generally to avoid going to the doctor as much as possible. And by by everything that you said today, I think maybe that's an instinct that might be a survival one.
But now they've got men on different things like cholesterol drugs and also Viagra,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of men have gotten sucked into that marketing ploy.
Well, and we've seen with Vioxx, too, that a lot of people have rheumatism.
Yeah.
We have an aging population. And you take these Vioxx things that Health Canada seemed very, you know, down with, even though lots of people were ringing the warning bells, and it causes heart attacks and heart valve problems and stuff. And uncounted thousands of people have died prematurely because of that. You know, I mean, who's overseeing the overseers in this? I mean, you know, it's a scary thing. But anyway, listen... Angela, you're going to be in town, as I mentioned, June 1st with your tour, the Healthy Mind, Body, Planet Tour, and you'll be talking about this and other issues. I'm sorry that we don't have a little bit more time today, but I encourage everyone to go down and catch your show when you hit town June 1.
It's at 7 p.m., and for anyone who can't make the event, I want to invite them to check out my website, greenspiration.org. They can see all the materials that we're distributing, and they can even see a trailer of our tour. They can download Depression Expression, which is a 20-page newspaper tabloid that we're distributing across the country, all on these issues.
Greenspiration.org?
Yep.
Very good. All right, Angela, well, I want to thank you, and I want to thank, of course, my first guest as well, Paul Craig Roberts, and Janine for all the great work she's done for so constantly on this program and for her show, 11 a.m. Thursday. And that's all I got for you. Oh, well, I do have one more thing that I was kind of saving up because I made mention of it earlier, so I'll come back. I'm going to take a little break here, and I'll be back just to give you a hint of some of the things that I was talking about earlier with Mr. Roberts. Thanks again, Angela.
Thanks, Chris.
Bye-bye.
Eclectic folk and world music, Thursday mornings on CFUV. This is Rod McCrimmon inviting you to join me between 8 and 10 a.m. Thursdays for the Eclectic Folk Show on CFUV FM.
Oh, so many shows on this CFUV. Now, I mentioned that I'd written an article, and I don't have much time. Arnold's coming right up with jazz in 2.5 minutes or so, but I'm going to get as much of this as I can, because this really bugs me. I mean, this is a National Post. It's an article called Iran Eyes Badges for Jews. Front page of last Friday. It's disappeared from their website now. They've scrubbed it up, but I caught it, and you can see the headline for yourself if you've got a computer and you go to pej.org. The story I wrote is called Creating Kristallnack Hate Baiting at the National Post. Canada's National Post broke a sensational story, a story so big the flagship of CanWest Global Media Monolith denied its nationwide dailies, keeping the scoop to themselves. Today, the Post reported Iran has signed into law a provision requiring Iranian Jews and Christians wear identifying badges declaring their religious affiliation. Below the 18-point high headline, a picture of a man and woman circa Hitler's Germany, each sporting the infamous yellow star of David stitched to their overcoats. It's a stunning development, one that should shock the world and finally convince all of Iran's despotism. But of course, the National Post story is a complete fabrication, a fact CanWest itself is now reporting. It sometimes seems we live in a time of unprecedented corruption, perfidy, and abomination. But as Shakespeare said, there's nothing new under the sun. Hitler is a name often invoked in the media these days, the terrors of the Nazi regime, especially referencing its grotesque concentration camps where state enemies were dispatched after suffering religious humiliation, torture, and God knows what else. The world has witnessed ruthless invasions and occupations inflicted by a tyrannical, rogue nation on its smaller neighbors before. In the form of Hitler's Germany, the world watched, horror-struck, a racist, ideologically perverse campaign of global domination whose goal was no less than the enslavement of the entire planet. Yes, Bill, verily, there is nothing new under the sun. The story of Jewish suffering under the Nazis, both during the rise of fascism in Germany through its progression to its inevitable ends behind the barbed wire of the concentration camps, reminds of the gruesome potential of collective barbarity. Even today, more than 70 years from the shocking and awful ascension of Hitler and his henchmen, the remembrance of the legislated branding of German Jews, all made to sew the Star of David on their clothing, is a particularly poignant symbol of totalitarianism, the aposset of human decency, early warning of terrible portent. It also serves a reminder of how quickly a society can be led into madness, an induced insanity that would allow the blasphemies forever recorded in the annals of history. It's a story that demands reverent acknowledgement, respect, and a regular revisiting. As indeed it is remembered in solemn ceremonies, news media, and motion pictures. It is a lesson hard learnt by millions of our predecessors and not to be treated cynically for political advancement or commercial interest. Though that's a message apparently lost on the editors of CanWest Goebbels, as CanWest is affectionately referred in some circles, the logical extension of the avowedly pro-Israel media monster's pro-war propaganda-driven information dissemination philosophy, as iterated by its late number one Israel Izzy Asper on his assumption of much of the former Canadian media magnate disgraced Lord Black's crumbling empire. Today's Holocaust hijacking presented on the Post's front page nationwide and quietly being disavowed even now in its online edition is the flowering of the hate war waged by CanWest in the service of a greater and possibly perpetual state of war in the world. CanWest proved today worse with this abortion of truth issued than their most jaded critics would believe. I can't believe it. I can't believe it took this long for the Likudite CanWest Global to descend to the eye-poking, nostril-gouging level it has in its smear assault against evil Iran, as sinisterly personified singularly in the person of its president, another Hitler in the making, who given half a chance would create a nuclear-tipped missile to set fire to the world, beginning in Israel. As he hates Jews, we're daily told, would have them all wear badges, immolate the nation, etc., etc. Yet the story is bullshit. phony as Saddam's WMD, the National Post published a pack of lies, lies told at a time when the rally cry to an unprovoked war of conquest and occupation in a far-off land is the goal of a furious lobbying campaign in America and around the world. Fake as the babies thrown from Kuwaiti incubators, abandoned to die on the cold, cold hospital floor, etc., etc., used to justify the first Gulf War. The Post's Iran Eyes badges for Jews and Christians is an incitement to disgust, fear, and the loathing of Iran and its people, the ones likely to suffer should another front in the war on terror be allowed opened. Hate crime, unlike America, Canada has laws against crimes of incitement to hatred of identifiable groups based on ethnic, gender, or sexual orientation parameters. What are Persian Canadians and the greater Muslim population of Canada to make of the Post story? What effects might they suffer at the long-knuckled hands of the National Post's misinformed readership? Will hasty online retractions of page one libels suffice to defer legal proceedings or government censure? Canada's newly arrived Prime Minister Harper responded to questions from the CanWest reporter tasked to refute the front page fiasco, saying simply, quote, "Unfortunately, we've seen enough already from the Iranian regime to suggest that it is very capable of this kind of action. It boggles the mind that any regime on the face of the earth would want to do anything that would remind people of Nazi Germany," end quote. Well, yes, Stephen, it does boggle the mind. And I'll remember to check the recycling for a front page copy tomorrow to hang beside the yellowed CanWest call to arms against Iraq already pinned on my wall. And verily I did, and that's where it hangs today. Stephen Harper, pals over at the CanWest Goebbels Empire can erase their online evidence of their mendacity, but I've got it pinned in black and white and color on my wall to forever remind me to never, ever purchase anything produced by CanWest Goebbels. And that's all I have for today. A bit longer than I expected to run. I'm sorry to Arnold for being, but thankful that he's so gracious. And he'll be right up for you jazz lovers. And God, well, I guess that's about it for me then. Until the next time then. Mm-hmm.